You're listening to the Evangel Wichita podcast, recorded live each week at Evangel Assembly of God in Wichita, Kansas. Download each week for fresh, relevant messages from the preaching team. Open your minds. Here we go.
Habakkuk is in the Old Testament. How many of you, I asked you, and you don't have to raise your hands, I guess that'd be embarrassing, but I said, make sure you read through the book of Habakkuk before you come today. There's three chapters there. You could read through it pretty easy and get a head start on what we're going to be talking about over the next several weeks. Okay, so it's in the Old Testament, the book of Habakkuk, just after Nahum and before Zephaniah. And that's where you'll find it. Or you can just go to YouVersion and pick it right there. But maybe in your life, you've noticed that there are a lot of questions that are difficult to answer. There are a lot of questions that come up in life that are very difficult to answer. And if you're a parent, you know this is true, especially when your kids are little. You know it's true. Because your kids like to ask questions all the time. And they're hard questions. A study showed that moms are asked more questions an hour than a teacher or a doctor. Mom. So if you're a mom, can I get a yes? We know. Especially if you have little kids, right? More questions. The research showed that 4-year-old girls were the most curious, asking 390 questions a day. That averages a question every 1 minute 56 seconds. Can I get an amen if you have a 4-year-old girl? It's like, please stop asking me questions. Questions all the time. Like, okay, so I started researching. And here's some of the most popular ones that kids ask, right? A 7-year-old asked their parent, they said, are there more leaves in the world or blades of grass? And go ahead and answer that one. Then they followed up with this. They said, what about trees? Are there more trees or buildings in the world? And then a 7-year-old comes and says, hey, are there more bricks in the world or bird feathers? You know, there's a question you want to ask, be asked. Maybe you've had this, a daughter, one of those 4-year-old girls probably came up and asked her mom and said, mommy, why is your tummy so big? And the mom says, that's because I'm expecting a baby, right? And the daughter says, well, where's the baby? And the mom says, inside my tummy. And the daughter's like, you ate the baby? You think back to when your kids are taking swim lessons and they have the big question, number one question, when do we get to learn to breathe underwater? When's that come, you know? How about this? And I don't have much use for this, but, you know, what is the name of the space between the bits that stick out in the comb? What's it called? What's in between there? Or they come and say, hey, since your eyes are blue, do you see everything in blue? Or in the olden days, was everything in black and white? Questions, right? They come up with them. Kids ask questions all the time. They ask a lot of questions. And sometimes these questions, as a parent, we get there and we're like, it's so hard to answer. Tough questions. And as we look at this Old Testament book of Habakkuk that we're studying, Habakkuk, there are tough questions that come in this book. In this book of Habakkuk. And the driving question that is behind this entire 3-chapter book, the driving question is equally as hard. Habakkuk wants to know the answer to this driving question. Here's the question. Why doesn't God seem fair? Why doesn't God seem fair? Maybe you've asked that question before. You want to know, why doesn't God seem fair? Why doesn't God seem fair? In fact, look at verse chapter 1. Go to verses 2 and 3. You see Habakkuk asking a version of this very question. He wants to know, verse 2, chapter 1, he says, how long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? Verse 3, why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? He says, destruction and violence are before me. There is strife. Conflict abounds. If you fast forward from this Old Testament book to today, people ask these questions all the time. God, why are there evil people that seem to prosper, that get ahead? Why are the good people, why do the good people have bad things that happen to them? Why are there evil people that do these things? Or you can even make it more personal. Why in my job, I do things the right way in my company, in my position, and those people that cut corners seem to get promotions? God, doesn't seem fair. Why do I take care of my body and I go to the Y and I exercise, I eat right, I do those things. And the people that don't take care of their bodies, they live longer. Now, that's not fair. That's not fair. Hey God, I raised my kids right. I brought them up in church. I did all the things I was supposed to do as a parent. And my kids are messed up now. But those kids whose parents didn't raise them right, they're okay. That's not fair. I take care of my finances. I save. I do the things. Why is it all the people who are careless with their finances, why are they okay? It's not fair. And God, here's it. It seems like you could do something, but you don't. Why? Why don't you seem fair? Why don't you seem fair? Now, as you get into this book of Habakkuk, we are going to find that Habakkuk is asking questions just like this. Habakkuk, asking the same questions. Now, before you get to this point where you say, well, you know, he's probably not a true Christ or God follower. He probably didn't love God with all his life. He probably wasn't really committed. Let me fill you in a little bit on who Habakkuk is, okay? Habakkuk is one of the prophets. He is incredibly in love with God. He has a very rich faith, but he, like a lot of people come through at different times, he crashed head on into a faith law that and it got to this point where what he was seeing wasn't matching what he believed. It didn't line up. What he was seeing didn't line up with what he believed, and it was a very difficult season for him. As he's writing this, it was a very, very difficult time, and a lot of people can relate to that. We look at Habakkuk. He's known as one of the 12 minor prophets. You know, we think of it in terms of minor and major, that he's less important. It's just that his book is smaller, and that's why he's classified as a minor prophet. But he's a prophet of God. We know the least about Habakkuk, actually, of all the prophets. But he was probably a musician and then a prophet. And why is it so important that he's a prophet? The prophets at this time were the ones who heard the voice of God, and they shared the word of God with the people. The people didn't have their own scripture. They didn't have times like that. God would speak through the prophet, and the prophet would relay that message to the people. So the people would listen to the prophet and then move forward with their relationship with God. So here's Habakkuk. He's a prophet, writes this about the year 600 BC. And when this book is written, 600 BC, this is a time where the people of God are very corrupt and they're very evil. They're on the wrong path. They're doing things that were not pleasing to God. So here's Habakkuk who comes on the scene, and God comes and tells Habakkuk the prophet. He gives him a message. He says, look, you need to tell the people that I'm going to punish them. But here's the spoiler that we're going to get to, right? God tells Habakkuk, hey, tell the people they're evil. I'm going to punish them. But here's the kicker. I'm going to use people who are much more evil than they are to punish the children of Israel. What? And so Habakkuk's, what? That doesn't seem fair. You're going to use people in the world who are more evil to teach us a lesson? That doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem fair. These are the people that are going to come and destroy Israel because we're living the wrong way. What, God? Did I hear you correctly? Was that the pizza I ate last night? Or is that your voice? And it's interesting that if you look at the book of Habakkuk, his name, the name Habakkuk means to embrace, to wrestle. Because as we read through this book, these three chapters, we are going to watch Habakkuk wrestle with God. And we are ultimately going to get to this point where we see Habakkuk embrace God through the difficult times that he's dealing with. So let's go back. Go to Habakkuk chapter 1. Let's look at the very beginning. Look with me at chapter 1, verse 1. We're going to, over the next several weeks, we're going to move through this book and talk about this amazing thing in Habakkuk. 1:1. It says this. The prophecy, some versions say the burden, some say the oracle, okay, that Habakkuk the prophet received. So you get to this point after verse 1. And what does it mean? What does verse 1 mean? It means that Habakkuk is receiving more than a message. It wasn't just like a Snapchat thing he was getting. This is much, much more important. This was a burden. This was a prophecy. This was a word from the Lord. It was an instant message, right, from God. This was, to put it in today's terms, like he was very serious about getting this to the prophet Habakkuk, okay? And so the prophecy, the burden, the oracle that Habakkuk the prophet received. And as you look at the word for prophecy there, as you study it more in the Hebrew, it means something so deep, much deeper than a message. It means, the word there, if you study it, it means utterance, it means doom, it means burden, which you see in some of the translations. It's a very, very, it's very strong language that's used at the beginning of Habakkuk 1:1. And so what's happening here, as we're looking at verse 1 in Habakkuk, what God is giving to Habakkuk is a burdensome message. It's a dooming message. It's a message that when God gives it to Habakkuk, he's going to come up and say, I'm not exactly sure I want to hear this, God. I don't want to tell the people this. They're not going to like this message, Lord. And he feels so strong. He feels so strong about that, that he goes, I don't want to hear this message. They're not going to want to hear this message. This isn't a very positive message. He feels very strongly about this, that he even starts pushing back against God. He pushes back against the message. And he's only one of the minor prophets that will push back with God. And look what he does in verses 3 and 4. Watch. I read these earlier, but let's watch this again. Verse 3. Why do you make me look at injustice? This is him pushing back. God told him, right? I'm going to bring a message. Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Here he's saying, why are all these bad things happening in our world today? Why? Why all the corruption, Lord? Why all the terrorism, Lord? Why all the unwanted pain, Lord? Where are you? Where are you in all of this? Look at verse 4. Therefore, the law is paralyzed and justice never prevails. That's what he says. Justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted. Here's Habakkuk saying, nothing's fair, God. Nothing is fair. He has three major problems with God as we look at this these verses. Here's what I see. First, his first problem is it seems that God doesn't even care. Habakkuk has this opinion that God doesn't care. He's letting these things go on in the world. So evidently he doesn't care anymore. They're just not fair. So if God's letting these things happen, God must not care. The second problem that Habakkuk has with God that I see in these verses is that Habakkuk thinks, and it looks like, God isn't doing much when he could. But don't go too far. Let me stop you. As we're reading here, Habakkuk does show a lot of respect. He says, I know you could do something, God. You are all powerful. You could do one little thing and it would completely change everything. If I were you, I would do it. If I were you, I would do that. I'm just not sure why you don't do anything when you could do so much. So he believes that God could do something. He's just not doing it. The third problem Habakkuk has with God right here is he says what we said already. Everything God's doing just doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem fair. Doesn't seem fair. And he keeps coming back to it. Have you ever been there where you wanted to say things to God? Like, God, I don't like the way you're doing this. I don't like it. I mean, we would never admit that, right? We say things like, God, I would do this so differently. I don't understand why you're doing it like this, God. I don't like it. And then we feel all of a sudden, can I even do that? Is that even legal to do before God, that I would sit there and ask that question? Is it fair to ask questions and to cry out to God, Mark, when I don't understand? So we have both sides. We have people that just come out and say those things. And then we have the people that are like, I'm not sure we could even say those things. Now, let me show you some truths in the Bible by answering those questions. In about one third of the Psalms, as you read through the Psalms, you will find people crying out to God. People who don't understand, and they're crying out to God. They're saying, what's going on here, God? Or, God, are you going to rescue me? God, are you leaving me here forever? You read through the book of Job, read through the book of Lamentations. They're very godly people who are crying out, have mercy, God. I thought I did everything you said to do. I thought I was on the right track. And now what's going on here? I don't understand. Where are you? Jesus, completely obedient to the Father in every single way, takes on sin in our place. At that moment, says, God, my God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why? In fact, so many people are afraid to bring very sincere questions to God. And I would argue that sometimes bringing these questions is a very important part of your faith. It's a very important part of the journey that you're on, taking these honest questions before God. And that is where Habakkuk is in our passage this morning. He is in that place where all of a sudden, what he is seeing all around him doesn't match up with what he believes. What he sees with his eyes is so completely different from what he believes and what he knows God to be. And he's struggling. And he's honestly struggling in this place. And he's struggling with this question, what do I do now? What do I do now? How do I get past this? How do I move forward? I'm going to illustrate it this way. And I know you may not be able to see this completely everywhere, but I'm going to draw a picture. I like to draw things. So I'm going to draw a picture on here, a graph that will kind of illustrate what I'm talking about here and kind of illustrates our faith journey even. Let me get rid of this eraser over here. But a lot of times in our faith journey, we start here, we move up, and our faith journeys look like a, I'll draw it a couple times so you can kind of see my lines. Okay, so I know it's not perfect, but we have a graph here. And so if you want to come and look at it later, you can. But in our faith journeys, when we come to know Christ, we start here, right? We start down here and we hit and we come into faith. We come into relationship with Jesus. And it's like we shoot out of a rocket, right? And we're just going with God and everything is happening. And it's great. We get to the mountaintop and things are awesome. And then things happen like what we're seeing with Habakkuk in this crisis of belief and this question. And we get to this point right here. Well, we're not on the mountaintop anymore, right? Things are continuing to move. And we're asking the question. I can't see things that are the same. It's like not matching what I believe. It's not what I'm seeing. And you're at a crossroad. You're at a fork in the road. And at this point, author Henry Blackaby in Experiencing God called it the crisis of belief. And the word crisis, the reason he used the word crisis, at this point right here, it's called, I guess I can write it up there, crisis of belief. The word crisis is not a crisis like you lost a loved one or you had an accident. But what he's talking about here is when you come to a point, like I said, with what you see and what you believe doesn't match up. And it's a turning point. It's a point where you have to make a decision. You must decide what you believe about God. You get to this point right here, and it's like where Habakkuk is right now in chapter 1. You get to this point, and you have to make a decision on what you believe about God. Faith in what we believe about God is very important. You see Hebrews 11:6, and without faith it's impossible to please God because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists. And he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So what you decide at this point, at that point right there, what you decide right here, at this crossroad, will determine whether you go on to be involved with God, whether you... It will determine whether you move forward in the God-sized plan he has for your life or you decide to go on your own and miss completely what God has for you. Here's the thing. This isn't a one-time experience either. Because if we keep drawing the graph, we can keep going. How you live your life is a testimony of what you believe about God. Now, there are choices, right? I said there are choices when you get to that point. And here's the thing. People make different choices when they get to this point. They often get to this point and they want to just go back to this mountaintop. They want to get back there. What can I do to get back to the place I just was? I want to backtrack. I want to move back to where I was just before. I want to move backwards. That's a choice. I want to go back to where it was safe on the mountaintop. They deny the situation that they're in right now and they want to go back. They think they can go back. It's an option. Or people get to this point right here and it's the fork in the road, the crossroads. They say something like this, I thought, but you're not, and I'm just going to go to forget this whole God thing, and I'm going to go all the way back to here. I'm going to go back to the beginning. I didn't have issues when I was at the beginning. Or, there's a third choice, isn't there? The third choice that says, God, I'm going to continue to trust you. I'm going to continue to trust you. I'm going to move with you. I'm going to go forward. I don't understand. What I'm seeing doesn't match up with what I believe. And I don't exactly understand everything. And you know what? God may take you on a journey that doesn't exactly get better first. It's actually getting worse first. And you're watching this going, oh my goodness. But eventually he takes you to a place that's far beyond where you ever were on the mountaintop, doesn't he? A place of deep intimacy, a place of security that you never dreamed possible. If you continue to follow with him, if you continue to walk on the journey, I tell you, he will take you places that you've never been before. You look at the verses in James chapter 1, verse 2 and 4, 2 through 4 says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind. Isn't that amazing that James can say, consider it pure joy when you face trials? That doesn't make sense. Look at verse 3. Because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you might be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So he's saying, hey, guess what? Consider it pure joy when you come here and you face trials of many kinds. Consider it pure joy when you get to this point and you're facing trials. Why? Because you know the testing of your faith brings perseverance, right? Oh, we don't like that word. And let perseverance finish its work. Why? So you can come, be mature, not lacking anything. So you have a choice. You have a choice. God may be lovingly allowing you to go through a season of doubt, questioning, fear, insecurities, unanswered questions, because if you stick with it, if you persevere, he will do something in you that he could not do any other way when you get to here. But you can't jump over there. You got to keep going. A lot of pastors have seminary examples. I'm one of them. And when I went to grad school, went to seminary, not knowing exactly what seminary was. You've heard me tell the story probably before, but I went to, my undergraduate is in marketing and accounting. And so then I end up going to seminary and they wanted me to read books and write papers. I'm like, dude, I'm a marketing major. I did projects and made graphs. It was cool. So, and they wanted me to read books and write papers. That's it. And I thought, well, this is crazy. So I go into seminary and I was pretty much well intact with my theology, my beliefs. And I remember sitting down in seminary. And I thought I was doing pretty well where I was. And I sat in these classes and I thought, hey, we're going to talk about the Bible and everybody's going to agree and we're going to be good and we're going to move forward and we're going to leave. But I got in those classes and everyone attacked every bit of the Bible. I mean, even the parts that we just believe, right? I mean, like, dude, that's, we just do that. And so I'm sitting there with all these questions now all of a sudden coming in my mind. I'm writing papers and reading these books and everybody's contradicting things that I just believed. And it's all these things happening. I'm like, God, what's going on? Why are these? I'm in grad school. I'm in seminary. We're supposed to be learning more about you. And here we're challenging everything. Like, was there a flood? Was it 40? Was it this? It was crazy. And I got to points in my life there where I wasn't sure I could get out of there with my beliefs intact. I didn't know. It's crazy. And this is the first year. I'm just like, I'm not sure exactly what I believe anymore. Why are they asking all these questions? I mean, it was the felt board in Sunday school. We just learned that stuff, right? So, I mean, I don't understand. They pushed me, challenged me. But I had to keep praying. I had to keep relying. I had to keep trusting in God that even though I felt like this was my journey here in this seminary, right? I thought I was going through like this in my relationship with God because they're challenging everything that I'm doing. They're saying all these different things. I just trusted that there was more. I was like, okay, I'm going to persevere through it. And at the time in the middle of my seminary life there in Springfield, there were these revival meetings that were happening and happening all over the city at different places, and their Friday night things. And I remember going and just pouring into those things. And God kept speaking to me and said, you know what? I am still here. And I said, I can move forward. I can move forward. I can do this. I can move forward. Some of you in this room, you are right here. You know what that is? That's Habakkuk chapter 1. You are right here. This is chapter 1 of Habakkuk. This is where we find him right now. You don't know what you believe. You're in the middle of chapter 1. And the problem is when you're in the middle of chapter 1, too many people walk away from God in chapter 1. Too many people walk away. Chapter 1 of Habakkuk is all about wandering. You wonder, God, where are you? What are you doing? This is chapter 1. And it can be a very important part of your faith journey. It's a very important part. This is where Habakkuk was. He was sitting right here, right there, chapter 1. Where are you? God, what are you doing? I don't understand. And God responds to Habakkuk in chapter 1. And what God says to him isn't what Habakkuk wanted to hear. Look at the response. Look at verse 5. God comes through. He brings Habakkuk an answer. Verse 5. Look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed. The word amazed that we read there. It means to be astonished or to marvel, right? Be astonished. Why? Because get ready for what he's about to say next. He says this. For I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told. And I'm going to tell you. So that's even better, right? Verse 6. I am raising up the Babylonians or Chaldeans, depending on what version you're reading, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. Look, they are horrible people. Okay, they are horrible people. They're the worst of the worst. They're incredibly bad, all right? Verse 7, they are a feared and dreaded people. They are a law to themselves and promote their own honor. Their horses are swifter than leopards, fiercer than wolves at dusk. Their cavalry gallops headlong. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping to devour. Verse 9, they all come intent on violence. Their hordes advance like a desert wind and gather prisoners like sand. Oh, that's awesome. So here's what God's answer to Habakkuk. What is God saying here? He's saying they're much worse than you are. And I know how you feel about them. I know that you loathe them. I know that you hate them. I know that you don't like them at all. But guess what? I'm going to use them to destroy you. Let that just sink in for a moment. Put yourself in Habakkuk's shoes, sandals, okay? That's not the answer he was expecting, was it? What would your immediate response be if God said that to you? You're Habakkuk, you're sitting there, you're hearing this word. What would your immediate response be? That's not right. That's not right. We aren't that bad. That's not right. So here's the deal. What do you do when you're in the middle of chapter 1, right there? What do you do And you get to this crisis of belief and you're not sure what you believe. You want to believe, but you've got so many questions. Can you still be a deeply committed believer with a lot of questions? Can I still have questions? Will God love me if I have questions? Can I trust him and have questions? Here's something I want you to see, and I hope it's freeing to you this morning. It's in your notes. A deeply committed believer can express simultaneous questions and faith. Let that be freeing to you this morning. A deeply committed believer at the same moment can believe God and yet be still a little bit unsure. We see the prophet Habakkuk having the same issues right here. He's the prophet. But God, what I'm seeing doesn't match up with what I believe. What are you doing? Let me show you a great example found in Mark chapter 9. You see a story of a father who brings his son to the disciples. Why does he bring his son? Mark chapter 9, verse 21, if you want to go there. Why does he bring him to the disciples? Well, Jesus is unavailable. He's up on a mountain. He's not there. So the father brings the son to the disciples because he's possessed with an evil spirit. Okay? So Jesus comes down from the mountain and he asks what's going on, what's happening. And he starts talking to the father. And we read that in verse 21. Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. Verse 22, the evil spirit has often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. "But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." In verse 23, "If you can," said Jesus, "everything is possible for one who believes." Verse 24, immediately the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe. Help me overcome my belief." Here's the father. He had belief that his son could be healed. He brought him all the way. But after meeting with the disciples, he found himself right here on the graph. He said, "I don't exactly know. I'm having this crisis. What I'm seeing is not matching up with what I'm believing." He's in Habakkuk chapter 1. He has questions. And he has this encounter with Jesus. And he said, "Help me overcome my unbelief. Help me make it through this dip. Help me make it through this. I trust you. I'll go with you. Help me." And Jesus walks this man through this crisis of belief to the other side. And he ends up in a place where he never thought he could ever get. He ends up at a place because he trusted. He said, "You know what? It's not matching up. I have this crisis of belief. It's not exactly matching up what I believe. What I'm seeing, it doesn't seem fair. I may have these questions. But I'm going to walk with you, Jesus. I'm going to walk with you." And that's exactly what God and Habakkuk are going to wrestle with. Look at verse 12, chapter 1. Watch this. Habakkuk has simultaneous faith and questions. Watch this. Verse 12. "Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, we will not die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure," verse 13, "to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves?" Verse 14, "You have made people like the fish in the sea, like the sea creatures that have no ruler." Look at this with me. Look back. They're going to leave it up there on the screen. He says, "Look, Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die." This is a statement of faith. He is saying that you may wipe me and everyone else out, but my children and my children's children will be back. This is a statement of faith. Then the question comes again. "You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing." And here it is. "Why then do you tolerate the treacherous?" Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves?" Right after that powerful statement of faith, Habakkuk says this: "God, I believe, but it's difficult. I believe, but it's difficult." Some of you, that's where you are right now. You're in chapter 1. You're in chapter 1 of Habakkuk. You're right there. Problem is, as we go to chapter 2, it's not much better. Chapter 1, you're in a place of wondering. Chapter 2, you'll see that you get to a place of waiting. Chapter 3, though, just stick with me a couple weeks. Chapter 3, if you continue to stick with God and you make it to chapter 3, you will come to a point That no matter what you see around you, that no matter what happens, you will get to a point that no matter what you see, no matter what's going on, you will worship God more than you ever have before. Why? Because of his character and because of his nature. So the question becomes then, what do you do if you're in chapter one? What do you do when you're in chapter one? What do you do when I find myself right here facing this crisis of belief? What I see doesn't match what I believe. And I've been asked in questions, God, this doesn't seem fair. Where are you? Where have you been? What's going on? It doesn't make sense. I don't understand. I would challenge you to do this morning. If you find yourself in Habakkuk chapter 1, you do the Habakkuk. Remember I said his name? It means to embrace. You embrace God. Can I just say it that way? You do the Habakkuk, you embrace. You embrace him. That's what it says. You embrace him. You may wrestle with God, and that means no matter what goes on, whatever's happening around you, when you're in chapter one of Habakkuk, listen, when you're there, you embrace God, you hold on, and you don't let go. God, I don't understand. I don't get it. It doesn't seem fair. But I'm going to hold on. I'm going to hold on. I'm not letting go. We may go all around, but I'm holding on. I'm not letting go. No matter what. You may wrestle back and forth. I don't understand. Lord, why are we going this way? We were at Disneyland just a few weeks ago. Took the family to Disneyland. Busiest place on earth. We ride the rides. I'm getting old. Some of them are a little bumpy. And I get on the ride and I put the seatbelt on. But if I didn't think the seatbelt was going to hold me that well, I would hold on, right? I'm not proud. I don't have to lift my hands up all the time. All right? I'm good. I hold on. My kids make fun of me, but I hold on. And some of those cars get really rocky, right? You're jerked here. I don't understand why I have to rock all around and break my back. But I'm going all around and I'm holding on. I'm not letting go. And they get to the end, right? We get to the end of the ride and we get to the stop and the people are like, you can let go now, sir. I'm not sure I can. Hold on, right? Hold on the whole way through. And then, did you like it? Yeah, I loved it. I don't understand why it's so bumpy. It's loud, too, in there. Some of those rides inside, I am getting old. It's loud. It's bumpy. I don't understand. But here's what I found with God. I don't always understand. But I embrace him. I never let go. Because no matter what happens, listen, no matter what happens, Look, I can't promise you a better life right away, but I can promise that when you get to Habakkuk chapter 1 and you hold on, you don't let go, you embrace, you wrestle, I can guarantee you one thing, he is not going to let go of you. He is not going to let go of you. He is not going to let go of you. He will never let go of you. Here's where Habakkuk chapter 1. It's not really a great sum up of Habakkuk chapter 1. We're left right here. That's where we are. So I was thinking, like, what's the bow? How do we wrap this thing up? Because it's kind of tough. It's kind of tough. You're in the crisis of belief. Here's what I came up with. Sometimes you're in Habakkuk chapter 1 and all you can do is embrace him. You don't understand. You don't have it figured out. But all you can do is embrace him. All you can do is hold on. All you can do is not let go. All you can do is wrap your arms around him and say, God, I don't get it, but I'm not letting go.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. For more great teaching, check us out on the web at evangelwichita.org or connect with us at facebook.com/evangelwichita.